Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick. We have another short for you today. Looking forward to what is going to be a fairly significant defensive reload in terms of personnel after the 2026 season. Joining me to talk about that is Andrew Ganzis. Andrew, how are you doing?
Doing well, Ken. Happy to be here. Always a pleasure.
Appreciate you coming back on to talk about this. If you did not hear the other pod that Andrew is on about the death of the base defense, give that a listen. It's good stuff. Andrew has some good thoughts on it. We got a little bit of the Ravens history built into that in terms of how they've migrated to a very little base defense and maybe some projections ahead to what Minter's defense will look like if everything goes right for the 2026 Ravens. But this 2026 Ravens team, unfortunately, is not going to be together for very long. And in particular, the guys on defense, there are a number of names we need to talk about. They're going to have to be replaced. And there is a possibility of extension and restructure on some of them. But the Ravens are also in about the worst cap position in the entire NFL for 2027. So they need to figure out how to save money, which unfortunately I think is going to mean a lot of these players are going to be gone.
Yeah, I think the Ravens sit at over $80 million over the cap for 2027, and there are several vets on the team, as you kind of alluded to over previous podcasts, that have over 10 years of experience on defense, and several of them being on one-year deals, Calais being one, Awuzie being one, and John Jenkins being one. We could see a draft reload in 2027 that was synonymous to 2026 on offense, but on defense, just to replenish the personnel loss that we've had from this perspective. There are also several contracts that are impacting the Ravens cap for 2027, such as Roquan and Nnamdi Matabike, that depending on how this year plays out, Roquan would need a lot of splash plays to warrant a continuation of his salary, more so in an extension perspective. And we don't know how Matabike's injury situation is going to play out for this upcoming season. So both of those could kind of be removed going into this upcoming season, just at a kind of bird's eye view of.
Let's talk about those two first, I think. And really the biggest two potential cap savings are, and by the way, some of these cap savings are already figured in. Awuzie is only signed for 1 year. Campbell's only signed for 1 year. Humphrey's only signed for this year. I mean, that's already figured into the $80 million. They don't have those guys, you know, signed for next year, so they're not contributing to that minus $80 million. Mm-hmm. So it's really, they need to get Lamar Jackson re-signed as the starting point of everything they do to get his number down, because that's where most of the pain is for the 2027 Ravens. But I did want to start by talking about Roquan and Nnamdi, who are the two guys who have a significant cap savings from cutting them next year. And it doesn't seem right, but Nnamdi Matabike is already entering the fourth year of his four-year deal in 2027. I mean, year three is 26. And year four, he'll have $11 million and change they can save for cutting him as it stands right now. I don't think the Ravens can pass that up. And let's start with something else. I think the Ravens' building block to determine how they're going to approach the 2027 contract dilemma is, it has to start with, can they get Lamar Jackson signed? If they can get Lamar Jackson signed, then they can make some other commitments that will save them money in the short term and essentially push more money out and do more leveraging of the team. If they can't get Lamar Jackson signed and they're going to end up losing him either after the 2027 season or worse yet, if they talk it out, they're acrimonious and Lamar says, well, just trade me then and waives his own trade clause and no trade clause, which that would be what would be doing, then you know, the Ravens could be in a position where they have to unload him. I hate the idea. You know, everybody listens to me talk about this. I want to see Lamar Jackson wear a Ravens uniform for every game of his NFL career. But, you know, he could put the Ravens in a circumstance where there's no alternative other than to trade him. And I think people don't understand how perilously close they were to that happening in the last round of negotiations with him. So Let's hope it doesn't happen, and let's hope that Lamar and the Ravens can work this out, and then that opens up a lot of choices for the Ravens in terms of how they deal with the cap. But if they're not going to have Lamar Jackson either 27 or even in 28, then I think the expenditures on Roquan Smith and Nnamdi Matabike then become luxuries the team probably needs to eat in one season.
Absolutely. I mean, the Lamar Jackson doomsday contract situation is something we have to bring up in this conversation, as it is relevant to how this forecast of this team kind of looks for 2027 and beyond. You just don't know where Lamar is at with, is it a term issue? How long does he want? How much longer does he want to play for in the NFL? He probably just wants to see how Doyle's system ends up going and how Minter acts up working as a coach. I mean, vibes seem great right now. He probably just wants to see how it all plays out from his perspective. Going back to the defense, in terms of defensive spending overall, the Ravens kind of sit at 16th overall in the NFL. They sit at around $105 million overall spent on defense. That's roughly 36.4% of their total cap. Roquan Smith is the number one spent linebacker at his position, which has kind of been devalued over the league, with the two top linebackers being both Roquan and Fred Warner. Kyle Hamilton for 2026 is the number five paid safety. Nnamdi is the number eight paid interior defensive lineman. Marlon Humphrey is the number eight paid quarterback. Cornerback, and then we're ranked number 29 at edge with Hendrickson.
So you're saying their aggregate number, I see you had this in your notes here, is $106 million spent on defense. That's 16th in the NFL. Nothing wrong with that, although a team with a very mature quarterback like Lamar Jackson typically is not going to be able to do better than that. I guess that the teams that are spending less than the Ravens on defense typically will have that top quarterback.
Absolutely. And that's how you kind of delineate the cap space. Just if you have a big market quarterback, you can have to put less assets towards other things. But so ultimately, I kind of wanted to bring up, do we, quote unquote, defund the defense with the amount of spending that we have, with Roquan being number one at linebacker and Marlon being number eight at cornerback for this season, and Nnamdi being number eight at defensive line. We talked about those three. Marlon's still in the books for 2027, those being void years from his previous deals. Roquan, you can save, I believe, $20 million if he's cut. Right. I believe the same for Nnamdi.
It's $11 million for Nnamdi. And we gotta talk on the same accounting basis. I didn't look it up right now, so maybe I should again just to see, but I believe it's $11 million for cutting Nnamdi at the beginning of year four. And it has to do with other prorations that were made from earlier seasons. They've already had money pushed forward. And if you're looking at it and you're seeing something different, by the way, just correct me now. That I'd appreciate that.
I don't have any notes, but I remember that Roquan was around $20 million, and if Nnamdi is around 11, that's accurate, but I can look into it. So in terms of how
I'm looking at it right now, 27, it's 11 million of savings if cut pre June 1. Now it's about 18 or 19 million if you cut him after June 1, but then all you're talking about is the accounting for that. So we want to have one accounting basis. And so the accounting basis has got to be a pre June 1 cut. And then if you want to push more money out by using a post-June 1 cut, you can do that. But teams have lots of ways to push money forward. We're trying to say, what's the actual savings of cutting Nnamdi? That's only about $11
million. For sure. And we talked about these guys being luxuries for 2027 with a Lamar contract. How much they're viewed as part of the whole defensive future depends on, number one, Lamar's contract, and number two, their play for 2027. Roquan, we hopefully we'll get to see. I mean, he has several All-Pro accolades and Pro Bowl accolades, but we'd like to see more splash plays, turnovers, and touchdowns, hopefully. Same with Nnamdi, more sack production and more play time in 2026 moving forward for him, just to warrant continuation of that contract. If not, I think you have to kind of look to the future and the remaining players that we currently have under contract and looking at how we kind of view them long-term. I think the current era of the Ravens, you have your defensive cornerstones as Kyle Hamilton, Roquan Smith, and Nnamdi Manabike. Those could quickly become Travis Jones, Nate Wiggins, and Kyle Hamilton, just from a salary cap allotment perspective. And it's all about how this team wants to delineate the money.
And Trey Hendrickson, they've spent a lot of money on. Would you include him? Yeah.
Yes. I think, isn't there an out you can have at his contract after 2 years, I believe? So I'm not sure if he's as part of the future planning, but you can also take into account the nature of NFL players' contracts going from 4 to 5 year deals to more so 3 year deals, and seeing if that's really sufficient from a team building perspective. We were fortunate to lock Kyle Hamilton down to a 5th year option, a 4 year contract extension, so we have him locked down till essentially 2030. But the remainder of the team seems to be up in the air.
I'm looking at it. Is a $23.5 million savings if they cut Hendrickson in 28, and a $26.5 million savings if they cut him in 29. So there are significant savings in that contract. It's really a 2 year deal for slightly over $60 million. Is how you could look at that at Hendrickson contract.
I mean, fortunately, with his injury history, they're unfortunate for the Ravens backing out of the Max Crosby deal and having Hendrickson's contract. I mean, it's fortunate for them that they are to have that out and had a couple of years. Does Roquan have a spot on the Ravens in 2027? I mean, going back to that point, does his play warrant a $20 million cap hit? You have to ask yourself.
Well, first of all, they have other options there. They could extend him. The extension could be for less money. You're paying for a linebacker from ages, 30 to 33 or whatever, let's say, if you're paying for those years. It could be very realistic that he could be extended for less money, which I think is one of the options the Ravens have available to them. He's the highest paid inside linebacker in the game right now, right?
I believe he is number two because Fred Warner just signed. Okay. I'm sorry. He's number one this year, number two next year because Fred Warner just signed another deal. I might be confusing Derwin James and Kyle Hamilton. But Roquan is either number one or number two. I would agree with you. He may come back next season thereafter for less money, and you can do that by an extension or 1 to 2 year deal. I'm sure transitioning to like taking that Chidobe Awuzie contract and probably applying it to Marlon Humphrey, having that like 1 year vet corner deal that you kind of apply to somebody on the market. I think that's would be advantageous to keep Marlon if he plays very well in this upcoming season. But that effectively doesn't do anything with your cap because you're subtracting if you add that on.
So, okay, that contract, that $5 million 1 year contract that the Ravens have had a number of times with different players, Ronald Darby, they found a cornerback they really liked and he did well, and they Chidobe Awuzie, the same thing, and they found very quickly when they signed multiple guys, they've been able to select the guy who was good and forget the other guy, Mollett being maybe another guy who they got some value out of at a low charge. Unfortunately, I think that the expenditure of $5 million on your number three cornerback is something the Ravens may not be able to do anymore. And so I kind of want to transition the conversation a little bit into the thing that they can use to plug the hole isn't cap space, it's draft capital. It's really the only tool they have probably to try and complement Lamar Jackson's enormous salary with, you know, the offensive players they now have in place and the likelihood they're going to just pay some of those guys, because we've got some big ones coming up. Zay Flowers and Roger Rosengarten are coming up. They're the big two. Tez Walker is coming up too. He'll make a little bit of money probably. But those are the big two. And no easy pass, but Zay Flowers is going to be, unfortunately, is going to be quite a large number, I'm afraid.
Yeah, Zay Flowers and JSN's agent are the same person. So I believe Zay is going to sign a similar contract to JSN, because from a statistics perspective, they're pretty similar in nature. I'd say around the $30 million range for Zay Flowers. So then, like, you basically have reloaded the offense with receiver depth with getting Surratt and Jacoby Lane and Tez Walker. But we don't have that depth on defense. We keep pulling players off the couch, the Van Noys, the Justin Houstons of the world in the edge room, and then have recently resorted to shelling out some big money for Trey Hendrickson. But we haven't really done that on defense from a linebacker's perspective. We're always paying a linebacker big money, whether it's draft capital or in the trade market. CJ Mosley was a number one round draft pick. Patrick Queen was a number one draft pick. Roquan was traded for a second round pick, and we gave him a 5-year, $100 million contract. So we've always invested a lot in the positions from a financial perspective, but not a lot of development on our end from a picks perspective. We'll see what Teddy Buchanan ends up being, what or if Jay Higgins ends up being. Hopefully the 2027 NFL draft ends up being advantageous for the Ravens, so we can set up to kind of reload the defense as we did the offense this previous season.
If you look back at the 2019 Ravens, they're the only ones who really got away from the big expenditure there. They had planned to give the job to Peanut Owosso at inside linebacker, and that really didn't work. And they had to basically completely recycle. I used to say flush the toilet, but I'm going to try and change my terminology here because I don't think it's very complimentary. But they went to the street and they got LJ Fort and they got Josh Bynes, and they played a lot of dime that year with Clark. Obviously, we talked about that on a different episode, but it's a strategy to go cheap at inside linebacker and see if you can get away with it. And there have been, you know, there's at least this Ravens team or from Ravens history you could point to that was very successful doing it. And I'd difficult choices like that will have to be made. You can't spend everywhere. And, you know, I do every single player that comes up, you know, somebody on Twitter is screaming for the guy to be signed, and he's the one piece that's going to put the Ravens over the top. And, you know, it's just largely speaking, the way the Ravens are going to figure out if they can overcome the current situation and the belt tightening that will have to come with cap is by making clear and well understood decisions about how they're going to go in and try and scrimp at certain positions. And they tried to scrimp at guard last year, for example, and I don't think that really worked out, but they've tried to scrimp at inside linebacker before, and that has worked out. So it could be that's the place.
I think with Minter's staff at the moment, I think you can scrimp by with defensive backs with Mickens moving forward. I'm not sure about defensive line, because Weaver may be only here for one or two more years and then may take a head coaching job. So you're not sure from like a development perspective if how long Weaver's going to be in Baltimore. But I think defensive back is kind of a position where you can kind of recycle around in terms of prospects, but you can never have too many corners, as Eric DaCosta always says. But I think having one cornerstone guy, if you can afford Nate Wiggins is the guy at corner that you pay, and in addition to Kyle Hamilton, whatever his position you'd like to call him, as a positionless weapon at linebacker or safety, and then you kind of recycle around that. We've kind of seen how the Ravens have had a position lineage at corner and have had that franchise cornerstone, be it Chris McAllister, Jimmy Smith, Ladarius Webb, now Marlon Humphrey. Who's that next guy going to be for them to be that cornerstone at that cornerback room? I think it's Wiggins, and you can kind of interplay around that.
So you're saying you can pay one corner, and then you got to try and solve the problem otherwise at the other corner by not. And the real question is this, is can you get away without draft capital on that thing? Because I think you can, if you can get Tavon Young and Lardarius Webb and some of the other guys the Ravens have gotten in the mid rounds to play for you, then you have a chance to redo this. But corner, generally speaking, is a position. If you want top quality, you generally have to go to the top of the draft.
Absolutely. I saw an interesting statistic the other day. The average NFL career for a first round cornerback is 9 years, which I found interesting. Over all positions, it has one of the longest lineages. So if you can get a corner in the first round, that typically lasts pretty long in the NFL. And I think that's one of the positions where if you can get a corner in the first round, that'd be an awesome position. Whatever the fan base says about it, give it or not. But I think you can kind of, with the coaching that we have, kind of recycle around defensive backs based on the amount of skill level and technique coaching that we have available to this team.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com. It is a complicated process. For starters, the Ravens only really play two cornerbacks most of the time, and they really only have about 2.3 cornerback positions. And how do I get there? Well, they have two outside corners, and they have a slot corner that only plays slot in nickel. In dime. So otherwise, it's Kyle Hamilton. So they don't really have another nickel corner as often as most other teams do. Most other NFL teams think of themselves as having three corners. So the Ravens, unfortunately, have got themselves in a position, and this is one of the negative things about having Kyle Hamilton be such a dominant force on the defense. It's nothing would stop me from doing that, by the way, but is that you have a bunch of corners who are younger that they don't know what they have. And, you know, they have right now on this team, there are five guys that really fit into that camp. And one is Tampa, who, you know, you mentioned as far as they need to figure out who he is. He's in year three. And he's an interesting player because he might solve some of your cost issues at safety if he doesn't solve your cost issue at corner. He might be a guy that you move to safety and he could play effectively there. But his biggest, you know, hold up is the 4.59 speed. I'm going to go through the other four real quickly, and then I want to hear your response on these. They have two six-round picks last year who they lost both of them to injury for the entire year, and they also then in that process for Kone and Longer Beam lost a year of development, which is very serious, and not only a year of production but a year of development. And those guys are both back in camp. Longer Beam had a big interception in the OTA, the second OTA day. Actually, the first OTA it was. And Kone is a guy who's still on the side field practicing as we talk about this on June 1st. He's not all the way back. Then they have Rivers, who's a rookie, a fifth round pick, who looks like he's fairly limited in terms of being a slot corner only to me. And then the other guy they have who's young is Marquise Robinson, who's a guy who I think could still be an effective cornerback in the league. He spent his entire first year on the practice squad. Didn't really have great college stats, by the way, but he's a guy who looked great in the preseason last year. And I'm loving the thought of how Mickens can advance his game in some way. But he 10 targets for 29 yards in the preseason, which context plays a big role in. But it's five corners they've got to sift through to find out where's the value.
Absolutely. I think going back to, you have those two vet corners you sign, you hope one of them works out, and now kind of sifting through five, hopefully one or two of them ends up panning out for the season. Kone's multi-ligament knee injury, man, that was a significant knee injury that he had. he was a really interesting prospect, I believe, out of Western Michigan, I think, and looked really good in the preseason up until that knee injury.
Yep.
Really hoping him for the best for him. But what an injury to come back from, with and all these corners having to change in multiple directions and the demand on their position. You just don't know how much tread wear he has left from a career perspective. And it's great that he's practicing, but those multi-ligament knees can take year and a half for them to get back to full speed into sport. And then Longerbeam had a similar, I think he had a patellar tendon injury. I don't know if it was a complete rupture or nothing, or what have you, but nothing was discussed. But it's great he's practicing and making some plays and for the team in OTAs.
His injury happened a little earlier, and he elected the surgery. And from the syntax of how Harbaugh talked about his injury over time, I get the sense that the Ravens weren't maybe entirely, or he wasn't entirely okay with Longerbeam getting the surgery. That he would have preferred he played through it. So it might have been a kind of an elective in a certain nature, but obviously a real bummer. But Longerbeam, a guy who potentially could play inside or outside for the Ravens. He's a little bit taller, has some length, unlike Rivers.
Yeah, I think Longerbeam has pretty long arms. Being a Jersey guy, I would love to see a Rutgers guy succeed, but on the Ravens. And then you've got Chandler Rivers. You're not sure if the guy can play on the outside, but more suited for that nickel role. I'm interested to see. I believe we hired somebody on the defense from Duke, and they were very happy when we drafted Rivers. I believe he's a defensive line coach. But he was ecstatic when we drafted Rivers, because they're both from Duke. But I'm excited to look at Chandler Rivers' development. I think he's kind of probably a contingency plan for Marlon Humphrey.
Perhaps he was unquestioned leader of the Duke defense, so I'm not surprised by that. And I'm trying to remember who that is, the defensive line coach who they hired from Duke. I'll have to look that up. I'm not. It's not coming to mind, even though they made a lot of coaching changes, obviously, this year. Yes, I think he's probably an alternative to Martin or Humphrey as a slot. Humphrey, should be playing on the outside full time. If he's not, then they're losing value. But he's somebody who could move to the slot on third down if you have Uzi and Wiggins able to take those outside corner spots. And then obviously Hamilton moving to dime, which I guess we everybody knows by this point. But I want to look at this maybe from a top down perspective. You have two guys who I think have a limited chance of being back with the Ravens in 2027 in Uzi and Humphrey. I don't know that the Ravens know who they're going to replace them with. I would guess it's going to be draft pick plus Wiggins plus one of the five we're talking about here, stepping forward and becoming kind of a clear number three cornerback, and hopefully a second, challenging him in a way that is a solid fourth cornerback. And that could be Tampa. Tampa's only here for one more year after that, by the way, too. It could be Robinson maybe, and it could be either Kone or Longerbeam. But I'm really hopeful that one of them steps forward. That's a very difficult ask of your coaching staff to identify the guy who's really good, because live reps are in very short supply, and in season reps are in even shorter supply. So you've got the preseason, and then you the guys who play there always have context questions, right? So we had great preseason out of Marquise Robinson. And people say, well, what the hell does that mean? He only played the second half of a bunch of preseason games. And then you have players like Kone and Longer being Kone was great, you know, in the first half of some preseason games. And then he got hurt. So it's very difficult to find the amount of live fire you need for these guys to figure out if they're good. Joint practices will help, you know, preseason games will help, but even so, I mean, it's very hard to figure out of those five, who are the two who can really help you.
Absolutely. And if one or two of them doesn't end up panning out, as you kind of said, resorting more towards the draft next year, the gentleman from Duke, his name is Harlan Bauer. He's the Ravens outside linebacker coach, yeah, for this upcoming season. For sure.
Good that he likes him, certainly. Leader, absolutely. I don't think he's going to short the Ravens on effort. Let me put it that way. I think Rivers will be a high-effort player. Honestly, didn't have a great coverage year in his final year at Duke, which is one of the unfortunate things. And I've just put together my notes for the expectation series for him. And honestly, Rivers is one of the players that I'm not as excited about the draft pick as I am about some of the other Ravens picks.
For sure. I mean, I think taking that conversation, moving over to the linebacker position, I think with regards to with Roquan, Minter may do with Denzel Perryman, and I'm not sure who the other linebacker was for the Chargers last.
Henley or something. That's
how. Oh, Dalen Henley. So I think you have to look at that and see, can you get old Ozzie Newsome logic, 80% of the production for 20% of the cost, yep, and draft somebody or hope that Jay Higgins is the next Zach Orr from a linebacker perspective, being an undrafted guy, or do you extend Trenton Simpson for cheaper money if he ends up doing really well this upcoming season? It's just so interesting with how the league has been sort of devaluing the linebacker position and more so higher evaluating the big nickel position. When you have somebody that's as athletic as the Derwin James, Emmanuel and Hamilton,
those guys move into dime as needed. So you only need essentially 1 2/3 inside linebackers is one way to think of it. The problem I have with inside linebacker is primarily with Buchanan is I don't think the Ravens know where he's going to end up right now. I think they know they can't afford Roquan Smith next year. I think they know that they've got to figure out if Trenton Simpson can work with Buchanan. And I think they're going to, you know, Higgins will be around no matter what, because he'll be just a third year player next year, but where he plays could be up in the air, because Higgins could be at the most exciting thoughts about Higgins are he jumps in for Roquan as maybe a two down Mike linebacker, kind of like the position Josh Bynes played for the Ravens. He's not on for three downs. He's on there for two downs. Then you maybe move Buchanan over to be the Mike on third down, and you move Hamilton in to play dime. And that gives you your best kind of combination of inside linebackers. That'd be a possibility. If they decide Buchanan can play the Mike, which I have seen no strong evidence one way or the other at this point. I'm not saying it can't happen, but I definitely think we did not see evidence that it will happen from his rookie season. But if he's the Mike, then I think you can have Trenton Simpson potentially as your weak side linebacker for two downs. And I don't know if the Ravens are willing to pay for that or not. Like, are they willing, should they be willing to pay $5 million, or should they try and address it in the draft? Or 3 to 5 million, let's say, for a Trenton Simpson for a 2-year deal or a 1-year deal. Or do they go to the draft and try and fill it that way?
Yeah. It's interesting. All the checks and balances you try and see at the inside linebacker position. Moving forward from that, I mean, and then those goes the conversation with the defensive line. You have basically the cornerstone piece you have there is Travis Jones, and his contract expires in, I believe, 2 years. And then you have a lot of 1-year vets, Calais Campbell, John Jenkins. You have some help in the edge room and have built a nice, well-rounded unit there. But this team has, over the last couple of seasons, has really struggled with interior defensive line, predominantly because of the Nnamdi Matabike injury, but interested to see where that goes moving forward.
Yeah, it's the big age problem they have on the team is on the defensive line. The Ravens will typically carry five, and they have a 40-year-old and a 37-year-old among that group. And those guys, I, no matter how much I really respect Calais Campbell and what he's done in his career, he's not going to play forever. So they're going to have to figure out how they move on without him. And I think probably following 2026, not following 2027, when he'll be 41 and entering his 20th season or whatever the hell it'll be for his career. John Jenkins, I don't see being around in 27. I think they did it was a good re-signing. He had one of his best years last year. He seemed to really fit the Ravens in terms of what Zach Gore could get out of him. I think Minter gets at least as much out of him. Minter and Weaver together get as much out of him as they got last year. It'd be good if they did. Let's put it that way. And Calais Campbell, I'm always optimistic about what he could do. But the rest of the guys, I mean, they've got a competition between Rashawn Benny and Aeneas Peebles, which is a lot of the youth of the line. And then they have Travis Jones, who will be signed for his contract runs out after 27, I believe, right? So they'll have to re-sign him. And they should probably, by the way, get right to that, because he's a guy they'll lose if they wait the last second to re-sign him. And then they have Okoye. Yeah. Okay. So he's kind of on the outside looking in right now, because Jenkins will probably have the spot. So it's Jenkins, Jones, and if they only go with like basically two nose tackles, and they have Campbell, Benny, and I'm missing a player.
Broderick Washington.
He's going to be cut, so I'm not thinking of him. So is a player I'm missing, and I'm just feeling stupid for forgetting it. Let me bring up the Ravens roster.
You here. And I both.
We have Benny, Jones, Jenkins, Campbell, Matabike. If Matabike is there, and I'm not convinced that it's going to happen that way, then that's great. And they probably keep him for these next 2 years if he plays at a reasonable level. But you know, if he plays the way he did, frankly, in 24, which I think would be, I think that'd be above a 50th percentile result, probably above a 60th percentile result. He played the way he did in 24, comes back with, that means he plays a lot. He plays fairly well. Doesn't have the great pass rush season he had in 23. I think the Ravens have to cut him or restructure him or do something to make it work for 27. So it's going to be a major reload. And I think on the defensive line and probably at corner is where a lot of the draft capital is going to have to be expended to plug the holes.
I think maybe that's why we went with, aside from his history and lineage with the Ravens, maybe we went with the Minter route to kind of go cheaper on defense and kind of develop those players in the draft so we can invest more in the offense, pay Lamar a big contract, as opposed to getting more of an offensive mind for the head coaching position. And I think that's where you can really see Minter's value as a head coach for this team moving forward.
I couldn't agree more with that comment, by the way. Minter and Mickens were a lot of money spent that are outside the cap. Thank you, Steve Bisciotti, by the way. Any expenditures you want to make on top positional coaching talent are much appreciated by this fan base. I got to say, when you spend cap dollars, then you're spending my money. So that's the way I look at it, I got to tell you. But I really appreciate you going out and spending that. They spent a lot of money on Ledford. He's one of the highest paid offensive line coaches. He might be the highest paid offensive line coach in the league. And you know, that hopefully that will work out and pay off. And they've got Declan Doyle, who is a, you know, potential, you know, revolutionary kind of a offensive coordinator. We don't know. Revolutionary is not the right word. We don't know what he is. Okay. But he's a young guy. He has experience with both Ben Johnson and Peyton. And that's a guy worth taking a chance on, and tremendous reputation built up by age 30 for a coach who has not ever had play calling responsibility. So that all put together, that's a pretty terrific resume he's got. We're certainly hopeful that works out. But yeah, those expenditures on position coaches, they are the pure gold when you can make those work out. and Minter as, you know, a head coach who will be here for a while now. If he's able to, you know, get good results out of less than stellar ingredients, then he's going to be very highly valued.
Absolutely. I'm not really sure on your running back show, I believe it was with Ali. I'm not sure what we paid Faulkner, but it must have been a good amount to get him to come from Pittsburgh here. Hopefully it helps with the ball security that we've got, issues that we've had over the last couple of years with running backs. But it'll be interesting to see with the offensive side of the ball, what Declan Doyle ends up being, how long he stays in Baltimore, if he's a hotshot coordinator that's in and out in 1 or 2 years, or if you can give him an assistant head coach promotion and keep him for a year or two longer. We'll see how that ends up going. But I really appreciate all the investment that we've had from a team building perspective, based on the faults of this team in previous years being the loss of the offensive line coach that passed away.
Joe D.
Yeah. And some changes around the defense with McDonald getting promoted to Seattle. And it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out.
Yep. It's it's a lot to look forward to. And I'm optimistic. I really liked the coaching changes by and large. I thought they were very thoughtfully engaged, go through the entire process, the head coaching process. The Ravens clearly were dominating the entire head coach search process during the NFL offseason. I mean, they clearly were the job that everybody wanted. And that was great. And then all the assistant coaches that were hired, I mean, it's a really impressive group that they put together. And I'm sure they spent a few dollars doing it. And I really do appreciate that they found the value in doing that.
It seems as though, from the Ravens' perspective, it seems like a lot of teams were being just waiting for the Ravens to make their moves, to make their coaching hires. And once the Ravens kind of locked in on Minter, things fell into place with their other teams. And it's nice when the Ravens are an attractive job for people to go to, and you have that advantage.
Yeah, very, very much so. And you saw that, you know, you had to drop down several spots, so the Browns end up, you know, I settling for Todd Monken is probably a little bit insulting, but it's honestly, it's about right in terms of what happened. Is they got a guy who had to be pretty far down their list, I would think, in terms of what they wanted. But anyway, Andrew, really appreciate talking football with you again today. You know, we've had a couple of great shorts. I hope people will listen to both of the Andrew Ganza shorts, because they're very well done, I thought. Great discussions and went down a few rabbit holes, and that's just fine. But a lot, big change ahead for this Ravens defense, and appreciate you coming on and talking about it. Tell folks where they can find you online and have a discussion with you.
Absolutely. I'm on Reddit as ok-manufacturer-9572, and you can find me lurking in the YouTube comments. It's not a chance to read this. Feel free to reach out to Ken. He's fantastic. I send him emails and Reddit DMs, and if you ever have any questions want to talk about football, feel free to message him. He's fantastic to work with.
I got to say, really appreciate the Reddit community and all the contributions they've made to the show over the last 6 to 8 months or so. It's just been met a lot of great new people. And you get to your regular haunts, you know, the other boards or Twitter or wherever. And there's lots of people there. It's not like there's a limitation on them, but there's even more out there. And everybody's is kind of nichified into their own communities. And some of them don't like Twitter, and some of them don't like other boards. But the Reddit community is large and very good. And a lot of depth in terms of quality analysts out there that I've appreciated meeting. And you're one of them, Andrew. And thanks for spending the time to be so prepared for this show as well as you always are. Other folks out there, let me ask you right now, if you want to be on a short, just hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. That's the easiest place to reach me. Take a look at the YouTube channel, if you will. Like and subscribe if you don't mind doing it there. And I'd love to hear from you if you want to use hashtag film study mailbag for any questions you have. I'll direct them to the appropriate show. Andrew, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.